Welcome back. So Gift of the Givers says Israel is deliberately blocking aid to Gaza. The foundation is expected to deliver aid this Thursday. More than 70% of Gaza's 2.3 million population is facing catastrophic hunger, with the World Food Programme warning that famine is likely to occur in May. Now, people remain trapped in northern Gaza and some have resorted to eating animal feed in desperation. At least 27 children have been said to have died of malnutrition in recent weeks as Israel blocked the delivery of aid and food supplies. Well, let's get more details now. We're joined by Dr. Imtia Suleiman, who is the founder of Gift of the Givers. Dr. Suleiman, a good morning to you. Thank you so, so much for joining us. I think before we even get into the details of it, talk to us about the efforts that Gift of the Givers really has been taking up in trying to get aid into Gaza since October. I know this has been something that you've been working very hard on.
Good morning, Naledi. But before I start that, I'd offer my condolences to the World Central Kitchen, an organization in America that had five of its members deliberately bombed by Israel last night. They were killed in their car, and they are the ones coordinating food meals, meal distribution inside Gaza. They supported us in South Africa during the floods in KZN in 2022, and they supported us in Syria following the earthquake in Turkey and Syria in 2023. And four of those members who died were British citizens. So our condolences to them for being deliberately targeted last night. And this, to continue to answer your question, this is an ongoing pattern. Gift of the Givers, you know, has an office inside Gaza. We've been there since 2013 in terms of the office, but we've been assisting before that since 2009. Our teams for the first 60 days, in fact, on October 7th, we told them, you're going to get bombed like crazy because Netanyahu is going to be totally devastated by what has happened. Procure supplies from warehouses, from wherever you can. Give out the vouchers to the people. It's going to be an all-out massacre. And that's exactly what they did. They purchased stuff, and for the first 60 days plus, we managed to get items from inside Gaza. You know, there were warehouses, there were shops, there were places. We gave people vouchers. Our vouchers are well-known inside Gaza. We've been there since, as I said, 2013. And people honor those for our vouchers. People could buy food, baby powder, whatever that was available at that point. Our teams, in the meantime, bought medical equipment, medical supplies, again, what was available, wheelchairs, hygiene packs, took it to the different hospitals as best we could. We funded the volunteers in hospitals, giving them a cash salary, which now is meaningless because you can't really buy anything. There's no banks, nothing. So, you know, we gave them money as best we could, supported them as best we could. My teams took chances when they said it's very difficult to move, it's very high risk, we don't know where our families are, it's a challenge, but we need to serve our people. From our three desalination plants, they were supplying water, then the electricity got cut off, the local people gave them generators, then the fuel ran out, people took out fuel from their cars and the generators worked again, and then of course the water tankers couldn't carry the water anymore because the fuel ran out of the water tankers. Then people came with donkey carts and we loaded water on donkey carts and we delivered it to schools, hospitals, clinics, individual people. We delivered food parcels to individual people. We delivered hot meals. But that was up to day 60, and then everything died. It was not possible to carry on. It was too dangerous. Our people couldn't do anything. And then on November 16, the head of my office, Ahmed Ambasi, was deliberately targeted and killed by the Israelis after morning prayer. His brother, a medical doctor at one of the hospitals, was also killed. But we had contingency plans. At the beginning, I told them to expand the team because, you know what, you guys, some of you may get killed in the process. And they said, we know the Israelis work. We've already done that. We've already expanded the team. And, you know, the grief carried on, and our first convoy of aid then went in around 15th of December. Mm. It took 20 days to move trucks from Cairo into Rafah. It took 13 days from Rafah border in from the outside to the inside, a distance of 30 kilometers took 13 days.
That's overwhelming. And now I'm wondering then what it looks like at the moment. I mean, one hopes that with the UN Security Council passing that resolution, essentially demanding an immediate ceasefire for the month of Ramadan, and part of their demands is for aid to be allowed into Gaza, that would be easier now for Gift of the Givers to get aid to the people of Gaza. Has that been the situation now in the month of Ramadan?
No. The simple answer is no. First of all, Israel is a terrorist state. They are a rogue state. They are a pariah nation. Their leader is a terrorist, and so are their defense ministers. You see, when resistance meet people take up resistance to free themselves from occupation, they are called terrorists. But when states lead terrorism and kill and murder and maim innocent people, kill babies, women, children, bomb hospitals, that's called war. In this case, the terrorist state is Israel. They are not going to succumb, you know, and they are not going to bow down. They ignored South Africa's case of the ICJ. They are protected by America, who's vetoed every single decision by the UN, except the last one where they abstained. Maybe because it's a world pressure, I don't know. But even with the UN resolution, it made no difference. Even at the time when there was a ceasefire and we were told that so many trucks were going per day, that was never kept to. The number of trucks that were supposed to go in never went in. On a good day, 200 and 250 trucks go through. They need 900 trucks a day at a minimum. That was before the war. So during the war, you can expect realize how much more is needed because there are no commercial shops now. You can't go in the street and go and buy. So much more aid shops are required. You know, trucks are required for aid. On most cases, you get 40 to 50 trucks go in.
Okay.
We've had that experience where we got, you know, 3 trucks in 20 days. And the second time we were lucky, we got a few more trucks in 7 days. So it varies all the time.
Dr. Suleiman, explain to me, if you will, I mean, what the process then looks like. Because essentially I know that Gift of the Givers would then receive all these donations and you've got all these hampers that you've put together from food to sanitary wear and so much more, right? And we don't have to talk about what's in the packs. But what I'm essentially asking you is, where are the hindrances? So talk to me about the journey that one of those trucks would have on its way into Gaza and where the big blockages really then have been. Paint that picture for us.
You first of all, you have to purchase the supplies in Egypt. They had a currency problem with fluctuation in currency, so they had difficulty in getting goods. Then you have companies that don't want to take the currency because the bank rate is too low compared to the black market rate. But we don't do, you know, funny business. Our everything is legal. So then we have to wait for them to accept, or we pay the companies directly. They don't want the money to the bank. And then because they don't have the goods, they can't accept the money. So there's a delay. Then you've got to join. All the aid can only be delivered to the Egyptian Red Crescent. The Egyptian Red Crescent has been very good to us, I must say. And so have been the suppliers who supplying it to us. But like us, there are other people buying. And they have to wait for their trucks to come back. They don't have their own trucks. They hire trucks from companies. Mm. But the trucks are stuck at the border. Sometimes 1,000, 1,500 in a convoy. And it takes 20 to 25 days. It means you can't load your stuff on those trucks. And when those trucks come back, then they load your supplies and they have to wait in Al-Arish, which is an hour away from Rafah. It can wait there for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, with a truck driver being away from home in that period of time. Mm. And then eventually reaches Rafah. But you can't cross. That's where the people cross. The trucks have to go to Kerem Shalom, which is an Israeli checkpoint. There are 6 to 7 such checkpoints, and they're only using one. And depends, if there's so many trucks, then the road is full for 30 kilometers in both directions. And as they move one by one, the Israelis can decide whether they want to see 2 trucks in their warehouse, whether they want to see 5 trucks or 10 trucks. Mm. And they can take 2 to 3 days for that process. And even if they want to be funny, what they permitted previously, they say now it's not permitted. Mm. Coriander was not permitted. Tents were not permitted. Certain medical items were not permitted. Now in Ramadan, flour was not permitted at certain times. So they try to frustrate you, make you stay, check your truck after 2 days and send you back. And then you've got to join the queue again. And then after, if you're successful and lucky, then the truck goes back to Rafah, and from there they have to enter Qatar House. Qatar House is inside Gaza. That's where the UN does its the checkup. But there's not enough space, you know, and not enough people for the truck to offload inside Qatar House. And then the distribution has to be done by the Palestinian Red Crescent. But they don't have enough fuel and enough trucks. The UN has had so many people killed. They're short of manpower. They don't have finance. The roads have been bombed. You can't access the areas. You can't drive. You're deliberately targeted by tanks and snipers and helicopters and planes. So even once the aid is inside, they make sure it's almost impossible for you to move to where you need to go. Getting to the north is almost impossible. They said in the beginning, they told all people to move to the south. There's close to 500,000 people still living in their homes in the north.
Right.
They can't come out. They move, the moment they come out, they're shot at. They get killed instantly. 4 to 5 trucks of flour reach the people in the north in a month. 4 to 5 flour trucks for close to 400,000 to 500,000 people while surviving on whatever crops they have, whatever they have in the garden, whatever animal feed there is. I'm sure that death toll of 27 is way, way, way too low. There's probably thousands dead from starvation and dehydration in those homes. Nobody's going to know until somebody gets inside those buildings.
And then,
of course, to get to the hospitals, to provide food to the pain centers, I mean, it's just a huge logistical challenge.
I wish we had more time, Dr. Suleiman, and I think there's so much to cover here. For one, you've talked about how your own volunteers have expanded their teams knowing that their lives are in danger. But as part of this resolution by the UN Security Council has been a ceasefire, which means no shooting should be taking place. Talk to me about what you're hearing from your volunteers on the ground in Gaza. Is bombing continuing, and what are you doing then to protect your staff, if at all?
Bombing has never stopped. From the moment of the ceasefire, the bombing has been very intense. You know, 2 days ago, 200 people were killed. In Shifa Hospital, the day before yesterday, they found 300 people were killed. Doctors and their medical staff were executed. They found bodies all over the hospital. That was, of course, before the ceasefire. But the bombing has been intense in a huge way. It has made no difference. In some cases, it has been even worse than before. The other 2 points on this, you know, America said they like to send aid through a temporary port. It's so cynical. Their weapons are killing Palestinians in the morning. It's like saying, my dear Palestinian friends, we are sending you aid in the morning. Eat nicely, and in the night, we will kill you with our weapons. That's the kind of message being sent across. And even the aid drops are falling on people. It's undignified. It's falling in the sea. People have to swim to get out of the sea. They're drowning in the process. Yet 7 road borders can be opened, and we can put 900 trucks a day. The second thing about Ramadan, it's saying it's okay not to die during the month of Ramadan. In any case, you guys are fasting for 5 months already. What's another week or two going to make any difference? We have given you, we stopped from food from getting to you. So no, and after Ramadan, we start killing you again. You know, it doesn't make sense, that kind of logic. There has to be a permanent ceasefire, or the war carries on and more people are going to die. And one more point, I lost one office member and his brother, but my team members have lost 175 family members. You ask me how they continue? I can't answer that question. I don't even know how they do it. I don't know what risks they take, how they go to, how they are mentally strong to do what they do. They bought poles inside Rafah. They bought tent material. They made tents. They found some other warehouses that people managed to sell them some food. They moved from north to south. Where they got the fuel from, I can't answer. How they're getting the money inside, I can't answer. What's giving them the power to go on, I can't answer. All I can say is these are the heroes, the medical teams, and the people of Gaza. Truly, this is faith and resilience. No other nation in the earth can do this.